are all going to die sooner or later, and having everything in order for our families, your family, my family, can be a really great last gift to give to them. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Next week is National Healthcare Decisions Week. And today we have Benjamin Adams and Ellen Kosky back again to talk with us about advanced care planning. Ben's an attorney, specializes in advanced care planning for healthcare decision making. Ben, thank you so much for joining us again by phone.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for asking us back again this year. We sure appreciate the chance to be here with you.
Thanks for doing it. Ellen Kosky is the executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Ellen, great to hear from you again. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
So Ellen and Ben can answer your questions about what you need to do to make sure your wishes are known. Talk about advanced directives or advanced directions, for example. Have you filled those out? Why do you think it's important? If you haven't, why don't you think it's important? Love to hear from you with your questions or comments, or maybe your experiences to share. I know it's sometimes hard to go through this process. Maybe not for you, but maybe it's harder for your parents. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Well, when we talk about, I gave this sort of general statement of end-of-life planning. What all is included in that?
This is Ben, Larry, and I think my statement on that would be trying to identify the things that are important to me or to you, and be sure that we communicate our wishes, our feelings, our values to people around us. And also being sure that somehow that gets documented in a directive, a document that can guide future decisions if I come to a point where I can't communicate for myself or make decisions for myself.
Yeah. Can we do this without the help of professionals, or is it better to get professionals?
You don't need a lawyer. Some of the least effective power of attorney for healthcare documents I've seen were lawyer drafted. But also some of the best. There are great resources available, and I think every year more resources become available to the public, coincidentally or not actually, but by design. For the next 10 days, the Wisconsin Bar Association is making available to the public for free their advanced care planning guideline. And all people have to do is go to WISBAR, WISBAR, .org, and the first thing they'll see for today is the article about end-of-life planning and the link to the free download of the guide.
You know, and I have the guide in front of me right now as we speak, and I really think it's great. I one of the things that I like almost the most about it is that it's really well written. It's written so that anybody can understand it. A very, very nice writing style.
It's really attempts to make people more comfortable dealing with these subjects and get them a beginning point from which they can learn and fill out the documents and ask more questions of their family or their friends or their medical providers.
Yeah. Ellen, I want to get to you because you are executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership.
Yep.
Tell us about that partnership and what it
is. Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful, but really what we're trying to do is, you know, connect the partners that are working on this. And what you were just saying really hits the nail on the head that this can be pretty complicated for people, but it doesn't have to be. You know, really, we live in a unique state where we need these legal documents completed for anyone age 18 and older to name who would speak for you if you couldn't speak for yourself. So what we work to do is just to try to get that message out and help connect people to the resources that are available 99.9% of the time free to help people get that legal documentation completed and filed in the right place with your medical provider, ideally. But also then the partnership is moving people to don't stop with the documents, but continue that conversation. So I always say that the documents are black and white, and they're very necessary in our state, but life doesn't happen that way. So we try to really move people to and help equip people to have these vital conversations with their families, to continue the conversation, to talk to their family about what really matters most for them, how would they want to be cared for, and who would they want to care for them, and to make sure that that information is known. So if an accident happens, if a sudden illness happens, or if someone is at the end of their life, their family and their care team can care for them in the way they want to be cared for.
Yeah. And I was thinking about just a sort of even a personal thing where, you know, with a parent who actually pretty healthy and playing golf and everything else, and then suddenly has a stroke, and then is mm-hmm. he had a long time before he could speak again, and you think, boy, we should have done some of this planning and some of this talking. Even though he was in robust health, you know, you think, well, I guess it can wait. And that's not a good plan, is it?
No, it's not. And you said the word that, you know, we don't want to hear, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas. And, you know, yeah. We hope that people can really take advantage, you know, when the time presents itself and share those things. Because, it may not happen tomorrow, but it will eventually happen to all of us. So, the more information, the better, is truly the gift that we can give to our families.
Yeah. Ben, I sensed you were going to start saying something as well there.
Yes, I was going to say you're never too young to start thinking or become aware of this topic and the need to do these things, Larry. You know, anybody who's 18 or older, if they become incapacitated and haven't prepared a healthcare directive naming an agent, then nobody can speak for them without going through the court system through a guardianship proceeding. As a matter of fact, Ellen and I are scheduled in 2 weeks to talk to this year's graduating class at Menasha High School here in our area. About the need for a healthcare directive, which we've done, I think, Ellen, for the last 6 years or so, we've been invited in to do that.
Wow. What kind of reaction do you get from these kids?
You know, there's a variety of reaction, of course, but there's a high degree of interest. Often some of the kids have, relate an experience that happened to a family or friend member that they've known where things were able to be decided or weren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my experience with younger people and talking about this is, people are comfortable. They want to talk about it, but they haven't really had permission or the opportunity to kind of go there and think about it. And we, today is a gift and tomorrow is even more of a gift, and we never know when our time may come. And so I think that kind of helping people as early as possible realize that helps you to really live each day in a better way.
Yeah. So what all, there are different parts to, we're talking about advanced directives here for a minute, and there are different pieces to it. Power of attorney for healthcare.
Power of attorney is the most effective way to do this because you actually can nominate or name somebody who can step into your shoes, so to speak, when you can no longer make decisions or communicate your decisions. So for people who have someone that they can ask to be that person, that's really the best way because your agent can then talk to the medical advisors and to family and friends and then communicate what they know your decision would be if you could speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I would add to that person doesn't have to be a family member. It can be a close friend or, someone that's close to you that knows you and is able to honor you and honor your decision, even if it's not something they would want themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of an important distinction you may not have, maybe you're estranged from your family, mm-hmm. maybe you have no family left.
That's a challenging situation for sure, Larry, and then Wisconsin has a different type of document called a Wisconsin Living Will or Declaration to Physicians that you can use just for limited medical decision-making. I don't use that one very often with clients, but if somebody doesn't have anyone that they can ask to be their agent, then that's a way they can at least address these issues.
Talking today about end-of-life planning with our two guests, Ben Adams. He's an attorney with Adams and Woodrow, and Nina specializes in elder law, advanced care planning for healthcare decision-making, guardianships, estate planning, a wide range of things in this area. Ellen Koski is the executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnerships. Love to hear from you as you listen to these experts talk. Give us a call with your questions, comments, or maybe your experiences. Love to hear those. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We have Dawn and Wausau on, and we'll get to her, and we'll get to you as well. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Then we'll be back with Dawn from Wausau and maybe from you. So stay with us. Most likely you have ideas about what you would like to have happen when it's time for your end of life. And end of life planning and healthcare decisions are important, I think, for everyone. You probably know generally what you want, but does your family know your wishes? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guests today are going to are talking about why it's important to get these things taken care of as soon as possible. With us by phone are two guests, Benjamin Adams, attorney with Adams and Woodrow, and Nina specializes in elder law and advanced care planning for healthcare decision making. Ellen Koski is the executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. She worked in government public health at the local and state levels for more than 10 years and has taught death and dying courses for college students as well at the University of Minnesota. So have advanced directive documents helped you when you or a loved one couldn't make decisions? Love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Ben, before we go to Dawn and Wausau, I just did want to mention again that the Bar Association is offering a wonderful publication. It's called A Gift to Your Family, Planning Ahead for Future Health Needs. And that's going to be free for people over the next 10 days, is it not?
That's correct, Larry. If people just go to the Wisconsin State Bar website, which is wisbar.org, they'll see right on the front page an article about end-of-life planning and a link to the guide where they can download the PDF and save it or print it.
Yeah, and I think that'd be something. It's offered for the next 10 days, but today would probably be a good day to do that, right after the show's over, I think. Now we'll go to Dawn in Wausau. Dawn, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make a warning in that Wisconsin has seen a significant increase in the amount of elder abuse cases that are being reported in the state. And as families of elders, you can plan ahead, and it's very important to plan ahead. But in some cases, these powers of attorney are instruments that are used by those individuals who are looking to prey on elderly. And it's really important, even if you do plan ahead, to be aware that these are some of the instruments that are used by these individuals, and you still need to keep a really close eye on some of your family members that you might be noticing have some cognitive decline, because this can be very devastating in what happens when these individuals prey on elderly.
Yeah. Well, let's get a comments from both of our guests, perhaps. Ben Adams, comment?
I think that's certainly something to keep in mind. One of the critical decisions in planning for your future decisions is, who should I pick as my agent? Who is going to be accepting that responsibility? Who will understand my values and will stick up for the values that I transfer over to them? And then Dawn's right. You've got to keep an eye on how I'm doing, how those people are doing. And periodically, it's necessary to redo these documents and change the people that you've named, because you want somebody who will be there for you and be thinking like you and carry out what you think your wishes might be.
Yeah. Ellen, anything to add there?
Yeah, I would echo what Ben said, and also to just put out there, you know, with the healthcare power of attorney, the document is not activated unless someone has been deemed incapacitated, so that they are not able to communicate or safely communicate for themselves, and two doctors or a doctor and a psychologist need to review the case and actually determine that that is the case and activate it. And so when the person is executing the document, it needs to be witnessed by two people who are not related to them and don't work for their healthcare system. So basically have no, they would have no benefit to this person's decline to say that they are in the right state of mind, they are in the right state of mind when they execute the document. So there are some safeguards there, but absolutely, you know, this is why, you know, moving this upstream and having, opening the conversation up to all adults in our state is really key, because we get people comfortable with it, and then that conversation changes over time, and who that person is that you would want to advocate for you may change over time too. So.
And Melody emailed, just to go along with this more nuts and bolts kind of thing, if the end-of-life care documents and or advanced directive forms have been completed in the past, must they be replaced with newer revisions of the same forms, or does their validity remain intact no matter their age?
This has been, Larry, they remain valid if they were valid in the first place, but they still, I mean, there are some issues that come up. One is, who's got a copy of that older document? Was it on file with the health system, and can the health system still pull it out of their system, their filing system, at the point it's needed? Or have you changed health systems and now your new system or new doctor doesn't have a copy? Have all of your kids changed addresses, so now that's no longer accurate? Or do you have their old landline listed as their phone contact, and now that's been defunct for 5 years? So I think it just makes good sense to periodically go back and visit this, even if you feel like your health and the health and behavior of your agents has not changed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yep. And Shirley in Bosco Bell has something, I think, that relates to this in a way. Shirley, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I was involved in the care of, or not the care, but visiting an elderly relative. She had been in a care facility for some time, and she was on hospice. But I didn't agree with the care she was getting, so I said, does she have a power of attorney for health care? Well, she had a power of attorney for health care that she had completed when she was sane and capable. But it was in a drawer at the relative's home, and neither the care facility nor hospice asked to see that power of attorney for health care. And I felt that they were mistreating her and giving her things of care that she would never want.
Hmm.
And nobody asked the family for that power of attorney for health care.
Ellen, a comment from you?
Yeah, that's really unfortunate, and I'm sad to hear that. You know, there's definitely, I mean, and like I said, that the document wouldn't be activated unless she was unable to safely communicate for herself. So, you know, many patients who are on hospice are still able to be what we call their own person. So the document wouldn't necessarily be activated. However, you know, we're working with our assisted living communities and other care providers to make sure that those documents are asked for or completed upon admission. And then they're honored as much as they can be should that person lose capacity.
Mm. Yeah, yes, and not every decision or future decision that a person might want is going to be written into those documents or decided in advance. So that's the benefit of having an agent who will be involved in decisions will be asking questions. You know, the situation Shirley describes, you know, if somebody sat down with her friend and had asked the right questions, her friend might have said, well, I want Shirley to be my agent and not yeah. somebody else. So I think it really is very important. And the other side of that is that, I guess, opinions and feelings about whether a certain care decision is the best or the worst can be viewed differently by different eyes and feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just exactly. And to go with that, too, I think that, you know, sometimes we do put a lot of stock in the documents, and while they're incredibly important, especially in our state, that doesn't necessarily mean, though, that that's the only person or group of people that are advocating or they're experiencing the illness with the patient. And so I think your experience of being there with your family member is really important. And a lot of times we have more than one or three people that are going to be there with us. So continuing to advocate and speak up and have those conversations is really important for family members and caregivers to do also.
Shirley, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Bob in Mount Horeb will give you a chance now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, this is a very fortuitous segment for me, as we have just recently experienced a stroke with my mother's condition, and we are, you know, digging into all of her paperwork and having conversations among the siblings and with her to a limited degree. We have found out that I am her medical power of attorney and that she does have a living will signed. But in speaking with colleagues and friends, they have all very firmly advocated that an additional DNR is necessary in today's medical industry to further stipulate the conditions that might be left out of the living will. And I wanted to know the panel if they had feedback for me on that.
Sure, I can talk a little bit about that. That's really a challenging situation that you relate to us. Especially troubling is the fact that only now after this health event are you finding out that you're the agent. If Ellen had been able to counsel your mom, she sure would have made sure your mom spread these documents to all the family members in advance, which would have prompted, you know, discussions long ago about future decisions. But fortunately, at least it sounds like she's got all those documents in place, which is a big blessing. As far as a do not resuscitate or a DNR order, which is the initials for do not resuscitate, that's not an advance directive. That's a medical order from a doctor at the request of the patient or the patient's representative dealing with whether the patient should have CPR or resuscitation in the event their heart stops or they stop breathing. So that's not something that can be done in a written document. Your mother or you as her agent, if her health care power is in effect, could talk to her doctor if her wishes would be, you know, if something happens in the future and I stop breathing or my heart stops, you know, the question is, would CPR be effective for her to allow her to recover to any type of reasonable health as well as she was before that event occurred? And with people with significant health issues or advanced aging, many times doctors will tell you, if you really ask them, CPR will not do you any good. All it'll do is be sure that instead of dying at home, you come back to life, so to speak, and then you'll die later on machinery at the hospital.
So, Bob, does that help?
It does help. It's, you know, the answer that I was unfortunately hoping I wouldn't hear, but knew that that's sort of the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and do not resuscitate orders are I recommend them often to clients not who are living in a nursing home or assisted living so much as people who are in the community where they might be out and about and then suddenly an event happens and the paramedics get called in. If you have the do not resuscitate order, which has to be showing as a bracelet, on your wrist, or you could put it on your ankle, then the paramedics can give you all levels of care, except they won't have to do CPR.
Yeah, I was going to just add on to that. Do not resuscitate does not mean do not treat. So really, it's only if a person's heart were to stop, would they not do the actions to make the heart start beating again. But if somebody, you know, falls or has another ailment and 911 is called, they're going to do everything they can to treat that person and to get the care that they need.
Bob, thank you again, and good luck to you and to your family. I appreciate your call very much. Let's give Arlene in Burlington a chance to join in. Hi, Arlene.
Hello. Thank you, Larry. I thought I had all my ducks in a row. I had my the power of attorney and the agent and all the paperwork and my spreadsheet with all the assets and the numbers. And then we went to a seminar, and we thought it was on real estate. Come to find out it was on cremation when you're not home, because this was out of another state. And it made me realize we had nothing planned if we passed when we weren't in our local community. So if you were in Florida or we go to out of the country for a month, what happens on this remote island? So it brought me to call the local funeral home and found out that they have a service that they're connected with, and we were able to talk about that and pass it on to the kids. But I thought I had everything covered and totally forgot that.
Oh, Arlene, interesting. Ben, a comment?
Well, that's something I talk to clients regularly about is getting their end of or post-life wishes, you know, planned and do that as a family with the local advice of funeral home planners. I don't know that the funeral home planner, when my clients go over to them, automatically brings up, well, if you're on a trip to Fiji, here's how we'd handle it. So that's an interesting concept that you bring up. But I think the idea of you know, actually checking that type of planning off your list is really important. And you don't have to prepay for those services, but making those decisions so that your family doesn't have to make them under duress, I think, is very valuable.
Yeah. Arlene, thank you so much for calling. Ralph in Milwaukee, your turn.
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering if your guests can tell me how I can get the horse to drink the water instead of staring at the trough. And I need some suggestions because I've done everything I can to cajole my relative to be gentle, kind, and all these things. And he doesn't want to take a drink of the water. And so I was wondering, do they have any suggestions to offer?
Well, you know, we all think about doing this, and we all are going to get around to it, but it's always too soon until it's suddenly too late. One of the things I commonly tell clients if they really don't want to get around to this, and I say, well, then some judge is going to appoint your decision maker, and I can swear to you that the judge will appoint the one person you would never want to make your decisions for you if you don't do this yourself. So that's about the only lever I can do. But let me just also say that all of the healthcare systems in Wisconsin offer these services for free, and many of them, like the systems in our area, have pre-monthly classes where you can go and get answers from people on the medical side and some guidance and assistance in completing these documents and even getting them witnessed and photocopied and filed with your healthcare system. So these services are widely available. It's just that people are slow to take advantage of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I would echo that. And I know in the Milwaukee area, there are definitely systems that offer similar classes and resources. You know, I've kind of found that, and this connects with the last call too, that sometimes people are more comfortable starting with talking about planning their funeral or where they would be laid to rest before they want to talk about their before death wishes. And so maybe starting there, and you know, all of those written directions are helpful. You know, and there's other ways to kind of do it and make it fun. There's a movement around death over dinner or death over dessert where people get together and they you know, make an event about it, and they share their wishes, and they, you know, witness each other's documents. There's also a movement called the Death Cafe, and I know there's one in the Milwaukee area that happens about once a month, and where people just gather and they answer questions, they ask each other questions, and they share stories. So that may be a little too extreme for your case, but, you know, I think really working it in to your daily life, and just small pieces here and there can really be helpful, instead of just kind of sitting someone down and forcing them to talk to you. But I think that even just letting people know that, you know, they want to, we love you, we want to honor you, and to do that, we need to know. And so just kind of bearing down and having those difficult conversations is important.
Thanks, Ralph, for calling. Douglas in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Douglas.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Yeah. Good. Well, I'm a doctor in Madison. I'm a hospitalist, which means I only take care of patients in the hospital. We oftentimes get patients admitted who have become demented and really need nursing home placement. But when they filled out the Wisconsin POA form, there's a box you can check saying that you never want to go into a nursing home. And that box forces us to then go through a lengthy guardianship procedure, which, like, you know, just adds a lot of aggravation to the whole process. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if the panel could comment on, you know, why that, section is on the POA form, and how they counsel their clients when they get to that to that box.
All right. Thanks, Douglas.
Sure, that's a great point. And I think Wisconsin is known as one of the worst three or four states in the nation with respect to requiring certain specific answers in our document. But it doesn't say I don't want to go to the nursing home. It says but it's written as if it says that. So most people who are just doing it on their own without advice from people who know what's really going on will see that box and say, no, I don't want to go to a nursing home. I don't want to go to assisted living. What they're actually saying is, I don't want to give my agent the authority to make that decision. I insist on having a judge and at least two or three lawyers involved in a guardianship and protective placement proceeding in order to accomplish the same thing. So I think if people would take advantage of the community resources, the health system resources, to get guidance in filling these documents out, we would have less difficulties with that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the model that we use is around a facilitated conversation where we help talk to people about, you know, what their own experiences are, what their understanding of the process is, and then actually walking people through the document. And so I approach that question by saying, you know, just to lay it out at the beginning, this is not whether or not you want to go to a nursing home. That's another conversation that people need to be having. And if they don't want to go, they need to start planning on how they're going to be able to be cared for where they would rather be cared for. So that's something that people do need to be thinking about and having conversations about and possibly planning for financially. But the question on the document is about, would you allow your agent to place you in a nursing home or a community-based residential facility should you be physically or financially unable to stay at home or stay where you want to be cared for?
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't tell people what to do, but we highly, suggest that they take the yes on that question.
Well, again, this all these questions can be answered, or good ideas in the publication, A Gift to Your Family, Planning Ahead for Future Health Needs. And where do we go to get that free copy in the next 10 days?
You'd go to the Wisconsin State Bar website, wisbar.org, and the article would be right there for April 9th.
Ben Adams and Ellen Kosky, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for listening in. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Net.